Welcome to Day Zero Update for October 20th, 2024. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Jenna Victoria.
And yeah, this is episode 500.
Mm-hmm.
Yay.
Yay.
Means we've been doing this for a very long time.
Yeah, yeah, we not have.
Not as long as some people out there.
Nope.
Like, I know, like, the Bombcast is in the 800s somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
That's ridiculous. And other people have podcasts that have been going for nearly 20 years at this point.
Yep.
Which is a long time. But hey,
we're
at 500, so that's good. We have a bunch of stuff to talk about today. There's been a bunch of news, a number of games getting announced or dates and whatnot. We got some good industry news, sales news and such, and we got some bad stuff. We'll get to that stuff. And then we got the Xbox Partner Preview. I had some interesting stuff in there. We'll get to that stuff a little bit later. Before we get to the news, we'll get to what we've been playing here. I'll kick it off. I've been playing a handful of things. I got TMNT Mutants Unleashed, the game that is sort of a follow-up to the recent movie. I think it's Mutants Mayhem. That was a very cool movie, very fun movie. This comes from one of the publishers that mainly does licensed movies or licensed games and such, Outright Games. They're not necessarily on the level of Game Mill as far as making stuff that is generally not good. I believe they tend to make stuff that is fine to pretty good. And I would say this is more on the pretty good side of things. Visually, the budget kind of fits the art style vibes of the movie. That kind of fits it pretty well. There's maybe a few characters that maybe have had their skin colors changed to a degree, like April, who is black in the film. Her skin seems a little bit lighter than what it was in the movie. A couple of characters that seem like that, but for the most part, all that stuff looks fine. It runs fine. It's an action game, sort of a co-op action game. You can play two-player co-op, which is a little bit weird that it's only two players because at the start of every mission, you have all four turtles show up, and then the ones that are not playing jump back out. I was kind of hoping there'd be a way to maybe swap between them, but that has not been a thing so far. I'm a few missions in for it, but it has a pretty interesting setup because it's set after the movie where the Ninja Turtles kind of are coming out of the sewers for the first time to really become a force for good and fight against the bad guys, which was Superfly and his crew of mutants that he rescued from the lab where they were created. And here, this is sometime after the Turtles have kind of saved the day and stopped Superfly and kind of seemingly made mutants kind of in a more okay part of society, at least in New York City. So I guess the mutants are kind of integrating into society with some pushback of sorts, some fear-mongering as you would kind of expect, because the beginning of the game, you run into some mutants and they start attacking. And so they kind of frame it as like there's something going on that's causing them to go feral or something like that. Start attacking, so you got a lot of the early enemies are like this fly that has boxing gloves. That's more like a bee with boxing gloves. That, and you get another variant of that that can explode. Then you get a hippo that can does like wrestling moves, and there's like another variant of that. So far, so kind of a bit repetitive so far, but it's not been too bad. And where I'm at, Rocksteady and Bebop are kind of friendly for a bit. They're like, oh, we're going to do a march that will, you know, help people kind of see we're not here to be monsters or anything. But they get angry with something and decide to run off on their own. They're going to get back at humans, I guess. they start becoming the villains you might expect them to be, which is not too surprising. I think that's where my next mission is at, is to take on them. But yeah, probably the most surprising aspect of this game, well, as they're adding more new features and such, is that there's kind of a Persona-style calendar system in this game, where you are taking on missions, but when you get them on your mission screen, it shows like, oh, you need to take this on in 3 days. And in the meantime, you can go hang out with people. Not all of these are people from the movie. I think they're probably created from either by the devs, or I think they have a show coming on going on that will be starting at some point. So they may be characters that are from that show. Mm. But you can go hang out with them. And it's like Leo, I think the one I've seen, Leo, he hangs out with April because they're sort of a thing. Donatello hangs out with this kid that has a drone. So a nerdy kid, Raphael, wants to hang out with this girl, I think, who hangs out at the swimming pool. Mm. And she has like a prosthetic leg, so that was a neat little surprise. Mm. For that, Mikey has not had anybody show up yet. But you hang out with them, get a little bit of like Bill story stuff. Nothing really super necessary, but the main thing they do is they unlock tiers on the skill tree. So as you're playing through missions, you're getting experience for all the enemies you kill. There's also extras with the these tapes that you find. They're not really collectibles as such. They're more things that either get dropped by enemies or hanging out in the environment, or you break boxes or whatever, and there might be one of those in there that gives you extra XP for collecting those. So that's a thing that you kind of want to look out for. You can also get just pizzas dropping that it will refill your health as you go. So yeah, the XP you spend on the skill tree to unlock more moves. And yeah, the action is fairly simple early on because you're not really digging into the skill tree yet. But you have your two basic attack buttons. You have a jump, you have a dodge button, and you have a run button that can be used for wall running and such. I forget what else there is. There's I think part of the dodge is you can cancel out of attacks, or when you get hit, you can kind of cancel out to take to mitigate some damage from that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's a lot more that gets added in through the skill tree, and yeah, there's also support abilities that I think come from certain characters. So like one of them throws out a box with some pizza in it to refill your health. One will throw in shurikens that will do some damage to enemies, and I think there's a couple others that I haven't really read out too much, but I've been bouncing around between the different characters. Mostly been Mikey, but I've been Leo a couple times and doing some of the other stuff, which works out pretty well. There's no leveling to each specific character. It's just a general like XP you're grabbing that you're spending on the skill tree. So that's been pretty good. There is one collectible of sorts. There's ooze canisters that boost either your health, your I think the skill meter or the special meter for those little support attacks that you can get. And there's one for I forget what the other one is, but you get I think four of those, and you upgrade the stats for everybody for that particular thing. I think you can do that probably at least a few times throughout, because it seems like it's going to be fairly lengthy for what it is. But yeah, you're doing a bunch of stuff there. I've gotten a cell phone thing, which lets you do kind of photo mode, though it's pretty bad photo mode because it's limited to what's on the screen versus being able to move it around in 3D space, kind of frame it the way you want. So that's a little bit of a disappointment. Mm. The other one is like this AR game where you're collecting mutants that are, you know, known TMNT characters like Wingnut and some of these others that are in different spaces. I think it's all in the social spaces. But the weird thing is that they don't show up until you click on the spot they're in, kind of hidden, which seems to defeat the purpose of it being an AR game that's supposed to show up over the area. As far as I've seen, they only show up once you've clicked on them. I may be missing something there because sometimes they don't explain things super well in this, but yeah, so far I've been enjoying that as kind of a cheaper, sort of lower budget game. It's obviously not as good as Shredder's Revenge, but it's pretty solid for what it is, so I'm definitely going to be playing some more of this. But yeah, that's the main new thing I've been playing. I've been playing more Metaphor with Fantasio, kind of still in the big cathedral dungeon. Been working my way through that. Haven't had a ton of time for the game, but I've been working my way through there as dealing with a bunch of zombies of sorts.
Oh, yeah.
That is easy, but also annoying. It's kind of really annoying when you're trying to deal with their stun bar, essentially, before you go into a fight. And some enemies that can just break through that, and others just, like, don't know what's going on, basically. I don't know if it's really tied to the sort of level they are compared to yours or whatever, but some enemies just seem like they can break through pretty easily, and others just can hit you and not do anything. It's like a system that I don't think is explained super well.
It's a lot of it has to do, at least starting out, with being able to gauge, like, you know, the movement of the enemy. Does it look like they're going to strike? And if they do, you know, hit the dodge button. I will admit, though, that, yeah, at first it's a little hard to consider. I will tell you, though, that later on in the game, they sort of expand. They make it out so that, you know, they'll have like they'll be able to make a clear signal to you that you're about to be attacked. I'll put it that way.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause like, I don't think the dodge is super great either. It's not like a Souls or a Zelda dodge kind of thing where it's very easy to pull off. You can kind of just get into attack animations and kind of be like, oh, this is hitting me faster than I thought, kind of thing. The other issue I've been having is I've been trying to put, I have the MC as the mage right now, and trying to put them in the back in the party menu, but they don't stay in the back. I don't know if I'm going to miss that I need to hit apply or something, but I have to keep doing that every time I go into a fight.
I can't quite remember. I think it has something to do with certain like actions require you to be at the front, so it might, you know, but the game might automatically reset your whatever your position is.
That seems dumb.
I can't remember because it's been a while since I've been in that part of the game.
I kind of wish you would be able to just swap who is the attacker, essentially, like the leader of the party. That is the thing, but it's like, well,
you can go into the menu where, you know, go into the part of the menu where your party is. You can change up the order of who attacks first.
Yeah, I've had that change for whatever reason. It used to start with Stroll and change to Hulkenberg. I don't know what happened here.
It changes depending on when you get a new person in the party.
Yeah, but this was with them for a while.
Ah.
Or it seems like it's changed. Now, it doesn't always tell you this stuff super clearly, like, why is this changing? But it also might just be, I don't know, attacks changing differently? I don't know.
That's what I would think.
I don't know, because I remember Stroll getting the, like, big hits when I do the squad attack, but then husband Hulkenberg is like, I don't know, maybe me trying to change the front and back part of the party changed that somehow and I didn't realize it. But yeah. I do like that they tell you exactly how many days you need to beat the dungeon. That's a nice little change from some of the Persona stuff. As well as you have side quests and such that are also like, you got to do this in X amount of time. Kind of make it easier so you know that, like, okay, I don't have to rush this dungeon if I don't want to.
Yeah, because fortunately, most of the side quest stuff doesn't have a deadline.
Yeah, so that's been nice. But yeah, that's been pretty much it for Metaphor or Fantasio. The other game I've been playing some of is All You Need Is Help, the game from Q Games, makers of the Pixel Jump series. This is on everything. It's on Game Pass as well. It's a co-op puzzle game that I was lamenting the ability to just play it solo and kind of swap between the four characters. So I ended up figuring out a way to play it solo, which is that you need two controllers, and you put each controller into duo mode, so you control two of the four characters with each controller, and it essentially divides the controllers up like it's a Joy-Con, which makes me think this was designed for Switch first, despite the fact that it's been mostly Xbox marketing. But you use each stick for a different character, and then you use the face buttons or the D-pad, depending on, you know, which side you're using. And it's only like two buttons you really have to care about on those. One for plopping down your character to put them in a place, or there's another one that's more for UI stuff when you get back to the hub area. You get coins for beaten puzzles, and you can go spend that on a gacha machine that unlocks new cosmetics for your character. The thing I do recommend if you're playing all four by yourself is change them to each being a different creature, because otherwise you get the same lines and the same voice acting for each one. So then you go into a puzzle and you're hearing the same line being reported, being played four times in a row. Like when you go into a puzzle level, every character has a line when they start. And if you want to keep your sanity, you want to make sure they're all different ones. Because the other annoying thing is when you're moving characters around, they'll just say things, especially if they've been sitting for a while. They're like, oh, I feel like singing. And it's like, okay. This makes it feel like this was made for very young children and not, you know, adults. But they have a decent variety of puzzle levels. There's at least like a handful of them from your basic type that's kind of a version of like a Tengram puzzle. Those kind of wooden block puzzles. You kind of fit these oddly shaped blocks into the spots you need to, kind of thing. But each of the characters gets a block spotted, you know, spawning around them in a way that's changes things up a bit. It's not always like the same ones. You get some often like Tetris style shapes kind of thing, but sometimes it's just like, oh, they have one extra block, so it's like a short little two block pattern kind of thing. You kind of just move around. You don't rotate any of the characters. The way you do that is by either bumping into the environment or against the other characters to get them to turn their shape around to fit what you need, that kind of thing. Which works pretty well for the most part. The only time it kind of doesn't is when you get to some more later area puzzles that you figure out like some of the easier characters to put down, and then realize, oh, I got to get this one through this tight space, and that can be tougher when they're not rotated properly and all that. But yeah, it's a pretty fun time. They have a couple other types, like some that are based on you want to set your characters down and spawn a ball that rolls into the stage, so you kind of have to have couple characters there to kind of keep it from rolling off the level, where you have to respawn it again. You kind of push it around lightly as you kind of guide it around obstacles to get to an area that where you're essentially creating a bridge. You're filling in this hole so it, that you can get to the area where you need to plop down your characters. You get some that have buttons that you need to hit to unlock gates. And there's two different kinds of gates. Ones that just stay down after you hit the button, and others where you have to take one of the other characters and plop them down on the gate once it's gone down to keep it down, so the other character can leave the area, kind of get to the place where you need to put all your characters at. Nothing really too complicated for these puzzles, but playing as one person with four characters, kind of swapping between the different different controllers. Often enough, it can be a bit challenging to realize, like, okay, wait, this one's over here. I need to move around and get to this one. That kind of stuff, just kind of having a bit of a spinning plate kind of vibe to the way you're controlling everything. But it all works out pretty well. I never ran out of time on any of the puzzles in spite of this. But the second area I unlocked is sort of an icy area, so I'm assuming that may be a little bit more tricky as you got more ice in some of these areas. But it did have a cool new puzzle type where instead of having a ball spawn, you're essentially creating like a snowball of sorts that as you're pushing around grows bigger and bigger. And you have to have a character grab this this block that is a heater. You essentially just plop down next to it and it attaches to you. And you use that to shrink the ball as you go. Because otherwise, once it gets too big, it gets very hard to push. But you also have to be careful, because if you eat it too much, you just shrink it all the way out of existence and have to start over again on that. So there's some nice challenges on that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's a pretty neat little puzzle game. Probably better if you have more people, but it is doable to play solo if you have two controllers kind of swap around. So that works out all right for that game. But yeah. That's been fun, and I played one of the demos on Steam Next Fest for a game called Ballionaire. It is a pachinko roguelike game, basically where you have a sort of pyramid-shaped pachinko board that you're filling in with these like random little bits that do different things. You might get a thing that bounces the ball back up. So if you can have that hit another thing, that you can build up your score, which in this case is done as cash, to kind of build up some cash. And then you might have some that are teleporters. I had one that was, and I think it was a broom, a flying broom, like a witch's broom, that if the ball hit it, it would latch onto it and the broom would just take it off screen, just fly off to the side. There's lots of little gimmicks here. There's items that it can pick up when it hits it. And like, oh, I had some that's, you know, different kinds of food, cheese, tomato, bread, grab that. You get to hit this frying pan. Then it turns into food and fills up two of the spaces around it with some food that you can fill in, and that adds potential more points. It's a lot of weird little stuff like this that you just fill up the screen with. When I was playing it, I kind of felt like I didn't really know what I was doing, but in sort of a Balatro way, you're kind of moving your way through rounds, getting increasingly higher scores of cash. And after each successful round that you're playing, you get a chance for, you know, another little bit you can put on the screen. You can also remove stuff if you find out things are not working. And you also get perks that will change the score, that kind of stuff. So it works out to be kind of just a complete nonsense game, which is kind of what Balatro is as well. And yeah, I managed to go through, for at least what the demo had, these three main bosses and their rounds leading up to it. and kind of getting through all of them without too much trouble, but this is also on the easy difficulty, so I wasn't too surprised that it wasn't that hard. But yeah, I think from there I unlocked the next hardest difficulty, like a medium difficulty. So I might check that out and play some more of that. But seems pretty good for the kind of nonsense thing, because the screenshots kind of make it look like some sort of Peggle thing, but you're kind of just building out this board of nonsense and seeing how it all interacts and seeing how it changes and evolves over the course of your little run, and seeing you can meet the increasingly higher goals that come with each round. But yeah, it seems like it's a pretty solid game, and I think it's out later this year. I think it's only on Steam right now, but it seems like it should be able to work on consoles just fine. But yeah, that's been pretty much all I've been playing. So Brandon, what have you been doing?
Well, as for me, I have been still playing Metaphor ReFantazio, and I've gotten pretty far into it right now. I think I'm sort of past the midway part of the game and into sort of going down the stream into the goal. But essentially, the game still manages to impress me as far as the writing is concerned in some genuinely incredible plot twists that have legitimately surprised me. Now, there is one plot twist that I kind of saw coming a mile away, and I think a lot of people who, before this game even came out and more sort of idea, more of what the game's description was came out, kind of called it. But yeah, I was like, yeah, I kind of figured that's what was going to end up being the case. But as far as like everything else, again, still the writing is amazing and how shockingly mature it is. I mean, you got to remember, this is Atlus we're talking about, and the Persona games, you know, they will take on really dark, really dark subject matter. But then they'll also intersperse it with some, and a little bit kind of juvenile humor. This game doesn't do that. It still has humor to it, and it still gets funny, but it doesn't really do the weird sort of juvenile type of stuff that you see in the Persona games. It's a lot more mature, it's a lot more even-handed, and a lot of times, when you think they're fixing to set you up for something like that, they end up completely defying it. But yeah, the game is just, it's really good. It's amazing. And honestly, it's definitely going to be in the running for Game of the Year. Now, it's probably not going to win against what's probably going to be my Game of the Year, which is Astrobot. But speaking of which, I also, the folks behind Astrobot, they're slowly putting out a series of DLC, which are the speedrun levels that also have, you know, new bots that you can rescue. And they put out the first one this week, and, you know, it was a speedrun level. And basically the idea is you need to first go so that you can beat the level at you're not given like a specific time, but you're given like you beat the level and then you're given like the amount of time it took. And then you are given the challenge to beat that time again. And through that, if you get you go through it first, you get the first spot. If you beat the time, you then get the second one. And that's basically the Astrobot DLC in a nutshell. The first level that they've got available right now is based around the construction worlds that showed up every so often. And, you know, because it's a speedrun level, that definitely means it's going to try and trip you up a couple of times. And it definitely tripped me up a few times. It's not like necessarily to the kind of difficulty that like the button challenges were, but it can be tricky. But that's what I've been playing. So Dadra, what about you?
Yeah, for me it's not been a whole lot. I've gotten through the end of East 10, which comes out on Tuesday, I believe. So yeah, this game's coming out soon. The review is up on Smashpad, and the bottom line is I didn't like it as much as I liked East 9 or East 8. And the main reason is being because your party is relegated to two people, you and Carja, who's pretty much the pirate princess, and for reasons in the plot, you'll find out why you're only teaming up with her. But because you only have two people, you pretty much use the square button to go ahead and jump between her and Adol, and a lot of it is familiar from there, except that you don't have a block button. You know, you're limited to a dash button that allows you to not really block, but avoid a bunch of projectiles or attacks. And you know, when paired up with a dual mode, which allows you to use both Adol and Carja to attack at the same time by using R2, you'll be able to unlock their super mode attacks from there. Aside from that, like it pretty much just uses a bunch of stuff that you know you've seen in previous E systems, where you know when you have a whole bunch of magic attacks, you will be able to use them, and then from there on out, once you master them, you'll be able to use them in order to unlock other attacks, which you can go ahead and change them on your equip screen, and it's cool from there. So once you're able to go ahead and understand that battle system, you'll be able to do that quickly. But if you were so used to what was seen in 9 and 10, it'll be a little bit hard to go ahead and catch up from there. That being said, like, the game isn't bad. My main disappointment comes from the fact that, you know, this is East 10. This is a milestone game. So, you know, I expected like a top three game in the series. Unfortunately for me, this is not that. That being said, like, the dungeons in the game are good. The side quests in the game are good. The main thing with this one is that, you know, aside from being stuck on the same deserted island that you are in the previous East games, you pretty much have an entire ocean in front of you. So, like, unlike other East games, you're not going to be shipwrecked and stuck on this one island. You actually have a whole archipelago to go through. And, you know, each one of these islands can pretty much be a different dungeon. Like, you'll probably find a rare unlock at the end of the island you find, or you'll probably find something that'll be able to upgrade your ship. And that's where things get a little different here. Like, you have ship battles, like, the same thing that you saw in Assassin's Creed Black Flag, or maybe even, you know, Skull and Bones. But at the same time, like, they feel a little bit limiting. You know, a lot of times in the game, you'll be able to upgrade your ship, and it'll upgrade things such as maneuverability, you know, the kinds of weapons that you have. And it really isn't a whole lot of fun at the beginning of the game, just because you'll have a lot more fun just, you know, using Adol and Carja in your typical, you know, dungeon crawling battles. But at the same time, you know, you'll feel like your crew actually matters. It takes a lot from East 8 and 9 in the sense of where, okay, you're going to go ahead and rescue certain people to be a part of your overall party that'll help you in the tower defense game. But if you've played 8 and 9, like, the tower defense games aren't a whole lot of fun. So it's the same kind of thing here, where you'll just wish that you were just, you know, doing the typical East stuff. And, like, this just does a lot of that. And, like, when you're doing things that are, like, traditional to the East series, like, it'll feel great. It'll feel like, okay, this is the game that I expected. But aside from that, like, the battle system is a little bit archaic because of what I mentioned earlier, and things like that. That being said, the story here is pretty solid. You know, the game begins with all of you, with all of a sudden, you end up on this hometown where all of a sudden you learn about the sea pirates, if you will. You learn about Carja. And, like, you'll find out that Carja is a hell of a character. Like, she is definitely, like, comparable to Donna from East 8 in a way. Except that, unlike in East 8, you'll pretty much, like, understand why she's useful at the end of the game. So you'll have to spend, like, 25 to 30 hours just going through the bulk of the game to find out why she's important. And when you get there, it's like, wow, she's definitely an awesome character. At the same time, it's like, you're using a version of Adol who's 17 years old. This is really like the second game in the timeline as far as that goes. And, you know, you're using a more immature Adol. You're using an Adol who's not as experienced in the field of battle. And, like, you know, you're kind of seeing that in that way. But then again, like, this game isn't bad by any means. It's the fact that, you know, we've been through so many entries and this game doesn't feel like it really goes through some territory that we haven't seen before, aside from what's in the battle system. And that's what kind of comes up short in that regard. That being said, like, you know, this is an East game. It's not Trails. You know, you don't have to expect this game to go over the book of 80 hours. You can go ahead and beat this game in 25 to 30. And, you know, if you decide to just go through a lot of the side quests a la Zelda, you'll definitely find some more value here. Is it good? Yes. Is it great? No. And, you know, maybe that's my own fault for expecting something great, especially in a month that has a game like Metaphor Fantasio. But yeah, like, I would not spend like $60 on this game straight up. This is more like a $40 to $30 game for me. So if you go ahead and see that, I would definitely die for it there. But that aside, you know, this is not a bad game by any means. And you know, it definitely has that going for it. I just expected a little more, and it's good in that regard. That being said, I'm also playing a little bit of Metaphor Fantasio. I am nowhere near what Brandon is doing right now. My brother has been playing through it too, and he's 25 hours in as opposed to my 5 hours. So I don't really have much to say about the game so far. But yeah, I'm definitely enjoying both titles. I'm in the middle, I already finished East. It took me about 30 to 35 hours to finish, and I'm excited to go ahead and jump into the bulk of Metaphor. And we have the Dragon Quest game, or the Dragon Quest remake of Part 3, coming out next month. So yeah, a lot of RPGs. I'm just going ahead and getting my way through it. But even though I'm down on East 10, I just want to remind everybody that it's not bad. It's just rough that it comes out, you know, this late into the generation. You expect something better out of the PS5. And if you're expecting, like, you know, the next generation of East, this is not it. This is more of the same. And that being said, you know, I wish there was more. But, you know, that's really it there.
All right. So, yeah, let's get to some news.
Mm-hmm.
First up here, some subscription news. As Game Pass, Microsoft has announced some games that are coming in the near future, the next couple of weeks. Let's see, for right now, for console and PC, South Park, The Fractured Butthole. That seems to be on Standard, Ultimate, and PC Game Pass. For console and PC, Donut County, for Ultimate, PC Game Pass, and Standard. That's a very fun little game there. Not super long. A few hours if you need to, but that's one worth checking out. New release here, Mech Warrior 5 Clans came out for PC and Xbox Series X and S on Ultimate and PC Game Pass. It's the new Mech Warrior game. Elite 5 Mech Star Squad across diverse planets, engaging an expansive campaign with immersive gameplay and intricate combat. So, yeah, some more Mech Warrior combat stuff there. And that's it for stuff available now. Things coming up here in the future on October 25th, Call of Duty Black Ops 6, console and PC on Ultimate and PC Game Pass. So you can finally check that out and see what the new game here is for them. So that'll be interesting to see. Seems like they are adding Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3 and Warzone to the cloud for Game Pass Ultimate people to check out on that same day. So you can kind of fill out the launcher there, I guess. Also coming up, Ashen for console and PC. This is returning for Ultimate, PC Game Pass, and Game Pass Standard. That's the Souls-like, indie Souls-like game. For that, it's the 29th. And the 30th, or 31st, Halloween Dead Island 2 for PC Game Pass and Game Pass Ultimate.
Mm-hmm.
Just for PC. I don't know if the console's already on there. Seems like it's already on console, okay.
Mm.
So there you go for that. You can check that out. Let me see here. For November 5th, they are adding StarCraft Remastered for the PC and StarCraft 2 Campaign Collection for the PC. Those are for Game Pass Ultimate and PC Game Pass. They are adding the new remastered version of StarCraft Remastered to Game Pass. I believe the original version's free on Battle.net. I don't know if they're bringing that over as a free thing and just not mentioning it here. Same with StarCraft II. They've essentially ripped out the multiplayer as its own launcher thing that will be free to play. And just adding the campaigns to Game Pass here to play on their own, which is 3 games worth of campaigns. So plenty of stuff there to check out if you're into RTS stuff. But that seems to be largely it from what I can see here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So some solid stuff there to check out.
Yeah, definitely.
Let's see. Next up here, Astrobot got a big update, adding the speedrun stuff to the game with a special, I think, 2 special bots with each of the drops here, as they are putting them out every Thursday for the first 5 weeks here that started this past week. Yeah, it'll end on November 14th for these editions. So I imagine they may end up just keep doing this, come up with a new pack of levels for the speedrun stuff, because that is a very popular part of the game, especially with the way that the PS5 has the built-in leaderboard stuff on the dashboard, so you can easily see when your asshole friend beats your time and you have to go back in and beat it to tell him to go fuck off. That kind of thing. So yeah, that's cool.
You know, just real quick, I also wanted to jump back into what they had on Xbox Game Pass, but yeah, knowing what they're doing for Astrobot, it's pretty cool. I knew they were doing this, but I didn't know they were doing it every week like this. And I remember seeing a whole bunch of Twitter threads from like people in the industry and like, people that I'm mutual friends with, like just doing all this cool stuff. And I'm like, okay, it's not necessarily stuff that's in my cup of tea, but this is definitely cool, and I definitely see myself jumping into this when I have a chance. So yeah, this is definitely cool on Team Asobi, and it definitely gives Astrobot more value. Yeah, and just quickly jumping back to what's over coming back in Game Pass in a few weeks, you know, South Park is definitely a great game to jump into if you haven't before. Donut County is great. Both me and Chris love that. Call of Duty Black Ops 6 is definitely going to be the marquee game. Not something that I'm too much excited for, but obviously this is a big thing as far as like the rest of the gaming industry goes, and along with, you know, Modern Warfare 3 for those of you on cloud. But you know, jumping into Ash and Dead Island 2, these are cool games. StarCraft for, you know, people on PC is definitely dope. And I also want to give some love to Throne and Liberty. This was something that I played at Summer Game Fest that I really enjoyed a lot, and the reason why I'm not into it now is just because we've, you know, October has been tough as far as like a lot of the mainstream or JRPGs that we've seen this month. And if it weren't for those, I'd probably try that out. So there's a lot of cool value coming out in Xbox Game Pass as of late. And there's also a lot of cool stuff leaving it come Thanksgiving. So, or not Thanksgiving, but Halloween. So, you know, if you have a game, if you still have Game Pass, which is still the best value in gaming despite all the price increases, definitely check out what they have coming in and leaving. So,
yeah. So yeah, there you go for that. This Analog has been working on their N64 emulation console for a bit, the Analog 3D, and they finally have it ready to pre-order. That'll be available on the 21st on Monday. Probably by the time you get this podcast, it'll be too late for you, so hopefully you saw that on your own, but they are taking pre-orders at, I believe, 11 a.m. Eastern Time. And they also have controllers that they partner with 8-Bit Do to kind of create a more modern looking controller that works with this. Kind of shaped like the Pro Controller. That seems to set that up pretty well to be kind of a more normal controller. That's $40 for that. 8-Bit Do controllers are generally pretty good. So even if you're not getting the Analog 3D, that's one that's probably a pretty good choice to get for your own. I assume there's going to be a way to hook that up to a regular N64, maybe even a Switch as well, to play that with a better controller, I think. So yeah, that stuff will be probably something people are trying to get. $250 for their console, so seems like a pretty decent price for what you're getting there, because that'll make it easier to hook that up to a modern 4K TV and have it look pretty good for that versus what you can do out of the box with an N64. when those are made for, you know, your regular CRT 4x3 TVs. So yeah.
Yeah, like it's really awesome. Like, I am not the market for this thing, but if I was, I would totally jump on it. The thing that sets me apart is the fact that it costs $250, and I don't know if I want to spend that for something that where you have to use your original cartridges for. And like, it's a little bit of a red flag for me because, you know, I still have my 64. I still have a lot of my cartridges, but a lot of them won't play, and I don't know if it's because of my cartridge or if it's because of my N64, whether it be the cleaner or whether it be like how, you know, how clean the cartridges are. I have no idea. Like, I would have to get one of these to check, and I don't want to spend $250 to do that. And, you know, it's funny because the leading image of this story on Kotaku is the platform as well as a bunch of games. And I'm seeing like Tony Hawk's Pro Skater, there just sitting there, and I'm like, I'm pretty sure those were all blue. I don't think I've ever seen that game in a gray cartridge before, so I question if that's real or if this is just an artist rendering. But yeah, that does like come to mind. But you know, if you're somebody who's in the market for this looks great. Analog has a great track record, especially like with their Game Boy Color release, early last year. So yeah, definitely looks cool. If I had a little bit more money, I'd definitely jump on this. But you know, as for what they're including, I think I'm happy with my N64 NSO. So,
Yeah. I think those might be repro carts or something like that.
Mm.
They also don't have like the Nintendo branding on them.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of them has like an ESRB logo on it. I think there's something there, but I imagine also people figure out a way to allow you to load ROMs on that. So that'll probably happen at some point. But yeah. That's cool. It'll be out pretty soon, or I think it's out early next year, but it'll be available to pre-order and lock it in. But another thing that's coming out pretty soon, also in 64 related, is that the Nintendo 64 app on Nintendo Switch Online Plus expansion pack is getting a new game, Banjo-Tooie. So people will be able to check that out here on the 25th. So it'll be this Friday, probably the second of the Banjo games there. So yeah, that's cool.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, Banjo-Kazooie, it's kind of a hot take for me, but I actually liked Banjo-Kazooie a whole lot more than Mario 64. That was my, like, you know, goat as far as 3D platforming collectathon games. And when Banjo-Tooie came out, let me tell you, so this game's a little bit weird. So Banjo-Tooie, correct me if I'm wrong, this game is actually a game that required the N64 expansion pack. You know, that's the same thing that, you know, you needed to play Donkey Kong 64. And as a result, like, you know, Banjo-Tooie was a game that had a whole lot going for it. Like, if you enjoyed Banjo-Kazooie, Banjo-Tooie was better in every way. But it was so much better that it was almost overbearing. Like, the worlds in Banjo-Tooie were just so large. I remember being able to, you know, I wouldn't call myself a speedrunner, but I was able to finish Banjo-Kazooie in a day or two. But Banjo-Tooie, I would not be able to do that because, like, a lot of times the worlds would be so big, you had to, like, come back and, you know, conquer a few of those jigsaw puzzles as soon as you had an ability to do so. And not only that, but just, you know, again, like just the sheer size just made it something else. And the funny thing was that despite the fact that every single one of those worlds were bigger than what you saw in Banjo-Kazooie, this game only had 90 puzzle pieces to collect. That being said, even though you only had 90, there were a whole bunch of other collectibles in order to really maximize the bear and the bird. So yeah, it's just cool to see. I'm wondering how successful this ends up being because, you know, one of the Microsoft heads was on record saying, you know, nobody cares about Banjo-Kazooie. And, you know, if you look back at Banjo-Kazooie debuting on Super Smash Brothers, and you look at the numbers that Banjo-Kazooie put up along with, you know, hopefully Banjo-Tooie does well too, you know, you wonder why a Banjo game hasn't come out in more than a decade in the Microsoft console, despite Microsoft having the license. So yeah, it's weird to see, but yeah, hopefully this one definitely finds its feet on the N64 NSO. It's definitely something I'll try out when I have the time to. I don't right now, but again, Banjo-Kazooie is very highly regarded in my life, and Banjo-Tooie is not so far behind. And in my opinion, it's a better game. It's just too big. And the fact that I'm saying it's too big means that, yeah, it's definitely a...
Yeah. So, yeah, there's that. That'll be out pretty soon. Also coming out in the near future, Tetris Forever finally has a date, November 12th. So that'll be out here in a few weeks. I am looking forward to this one. It's a pretty cool collection of a bunch of Tetris games that I don't know that I've played very many of these. Just because I mainly just play like the Game Boy Tetris. Until there was, I don't know which later version I would play more of, but yeah, that was probably the main one I had for quite a while until maybe there were digital versions. But yeah, 15 games, a bunch of extra documentary stuff to it that looks like it's going to be a pretty fun thing here. So yeah, looking forward to that. And then the second to last game here that we have a date for is Spider-Man 2. It's finally coming to PC January 30th as an early launch for next year, which would be cool to see for people that have not played it yet. That game is very good, very big, very, very fun game. So, yeah, that'll be fun for more people to check that out.
Yeah.
And I guess Insomniac is celebrating their 30th anniversary of their founding, which is kind of wild. They've been around for 30 years, but yeah, that's cool. And then, the last one here we have a date for is The Legend of Heroes. Trails Through Daybreak 2 will be out in the West on February 14th. They decided to pluck themselves right in the middle of that mess of games coming out in February. So best of luck for everybody trying to check out games that cost a lot of money. Because yeah, it's going to be a lot of stuff to buy for your time.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that month alone, we have Assassin's Creed, we have Yakuza Pirates, you know, now we have Legend of Heroes Trails to Daybreak 2, which, you know, obviously me and Brandon are going to pay attention to. I don't know about everybody else, but I'm happy that we're cool with NIS America and we'll probably be playing this game before Valentine's Day and that wouldn't piss my girlfriend off. But yeah, you know, for everybody else, it's definitely a fun way to go. It is a little weird. You know, just reading Japanese reviews, a lot of people say that Daybreak 2 is worse than the previous one. But at the same time, it's a little bit weird because Trails Through Daybreak is a game that can be an entry point to plenty of people. But I have also heard from people that have already played the Japanese version that Trails Through Daybreak 2 is a game that requires knowledge of the whole series. So yeah, I'm pretty sure that nobody who just got into it is all of a sudden going to be caught up. And that's just tough to say, but also that's just Trails in general. And like, you hope they find a way to get through it. But you know, the big thing about this announcement is that obviously this will come out in the early part of 2025, but you know, during that Nintendo Direct, we heard about Trails in the Sky the First coming out on Switch, and I'm pretty sure it'll come out on other platforms. And Trails in the Sky Kai, which is like the latest game in the series or the second latest game in the series, is going to come out like maybe sometime this year. And definitely, you know, Falcom is finding ways to like break the barrier as far as like worldwide releases, at least keeping it a year between. And it'll be interesting seeing where Kai comes after that. Like, I'm going to assume that Trails in the Sky is late or is going to be right after this. And then Kai will probably come in the fall. But yeah, Falcom's caught up, and that's definitely something to take note of moving forward.
Yeah.
Okay.
And this is only a 2.5-year-old game when it launches, so getting that gap a little bit smaller there. But yeah, let's see what else we got here. We got a new Tron game coming from Bithel Games, Mike Bithel Studio. They made a visual novel Tron game like a couple years ago, and now they've been seemingly done well enough with that they've gotten the go ahead to make a bigger game, an action adventure game here called Tron Catalyst, that is set in the Arc Grid, introduced in Tron Identity, which was their previous game. That'll be out next year at some point on PS5, Xbox, Switch, and PC. So that'll be cool. Nice to see some more Tron games, especially ones that are doing their own thing. I feel like they mostly had to do that because the movies are not exactly that conducive to making direct adaptations of them.
Yeah.
Because the original Tron is kind of a snoozer
for
the most part.
Very slow. Yeah, it's a very slow movie. I mean, even by the standards of its day, it was very... moves at kind of a snail's pace. I mean, and for that reason, like, I mean, the game for the Atari that they made is basically, like, two things. It's, you know, the motors, it's the cycles, and then that last part with the master computer. Like, it's, that's it.
Yeah, so you end up getting a lot of games that have light cycle sequences or some of the other vehicles that are in there and generic, you know, stuff with the disc, data disc, I think it is, using it as combat. So yeah, it makes for interesting games to kind of come up with what, how you work that into a functional game.
Yeah, I mean, as far as a Tron IP goes, I didn't really care for the original movie. I did like Tron Legacy a lot. That being said, like, you know, Tron's existence is owed to video games, and as far as I know, this is like the first video game, right? And yeah, it's tough to really have an opinion here, but at this, at the end of the day, Bithell has a good track record as far as games go. I just don't know what to expect with this one, whether it can be something strategic or more arcadey. And yeah, this is just something where I have to really just wait and see, as to really like make an opinion of what's to come. I don't know if Tron is that strong of an IP, but it definitely has a lot of like retro respect. But I don't know how far that'll go, especially coming from an indie developer. So
yeah, but yeah, this seems neat. So that'll be out next year. Let's see. Let's get to some good industry news. Particularly Dragon Ball Sparking Zero has hit 3 million units sold in 24 hours. So that's very good for them. Yeah, it's been a game that's been getting a lot of talk. Especially as I think people have been running into the buzzsaw in like the campaign mode, running into Vegeta in his Great Ape form. Just destroying people. So that's fun. I might get this at some point, maybe when it's on sale, because this is Bandai Namco, after all. It'll be on sale. And probably not too long. It'll be at least half off time early next year, especially if you want the DLC. They are planning to pump out a lot of DLC, even in spite of it having 182 characters. Half of them Gokus and Vegetas, I assume.
Yeah.
But yeah. There you go for that. That's some good news there. Also good news, Silent Hill 2's shipments and digital sales has topped 1 million units. Yeah, 3 days, I think, of this one is. And I assume this is probably one of, if not the best selling Silent Hill game at launch, at least.
Yeah.
Because they're typically not huge sellers. For that, this one has surprisingly done better than, let's say, the Silent Hill community would have expected as a whole. There's definitely parts of the Silent Hill community that did not want this game to be good. Just kind of wallow in their misery of not getting any good games in this series for a long time.
Yeah.
So much so that people even went and changed the review scores on the wiki page for this game.
Yep.
To make it look like it was lower until people fix it again. And it's like, man, people need something better to do with your time. You're going to sit here and be in this kind of toxic community that you're trying to build here. But yeah, luckily the game is doing well. So that's good enough for everybody. And the last one here, It Takes Two, has reached 20 million units sold. In the last 3 years, I think it's been 3.5 years, something like that, that's been out. That's pretty great. I think it reached 16 million units back in March, so still keeps selling really well. adding another 4 in the last 7 months or so.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's some good news in the industry right there.
Mm.
But yeah, let's get to some not so good news.
Mm-hmm.
First one up here, Tales of Kinzera Zao, developer Surgent Studios, has put the entire games team on hiatus due to their lack of funding for whatever their next project is. Yeah, they're all on notice. All their employees are on notice for redundancy, as the people running the studio are seeking a partner for their next project. But it seems like until they figure that out, they're kind of laying people off, I guess. These are mostly, well, some of these are people in the UK. I think they have people from around the world.
Mm.
There is a process they have to go through for that. But yeah, that's a shame, because that game is fantastic. It's well worth checking that out if you want to support them. It's another great Metroid-style game. But yeah, not really too surprising that it hasn't done super well. Mm-hmm. They keep the studio afloat until they get their next thing going.
Yeah.
But yeah, that would be, it would be nice if EA swooped in and maybe signed them for another game. But
mm-hmm.
it doesn't seem like that's happening at the moment. So yeah, there you go. Mm. Some unfortunate news. This next one's real kind of nasty. Riot Games announced layoffs, but did it in a really kind of shitty way, as they announced these in a post that they called an update on how we're evolving League, where they're posting here like, I want to share some important updates about League of Legends. We've made changes to our teams and how we work to make sure we can keep improving League experience now and for the long term. Mm-hmm. I want to be clear, we're not slowing down work on the game you love. We're investing heavily in solving today's challenges faster while also building for the future. As part of these challenges, we've made the tough decision to eliminate some roles. Mm. It isn't about reducing headcount to save money. It's about making sure we have the right expertise so that League continues to be great for another 15 years and beyond. Mm. While team effectiveness is more important than the team size, the League team will eventually be even larger than it is today as we develop the next phase of League. For writers who are laid off, we're supporting them with a severance package that includes a minimum of 6 months pay, annual bonus, job placement assistance, health coverage, and more. So at least seems like they're doing pretty solid severance for them. But yeah, like couching this all is like, here's how we're making League better for you, the player, kind of thing, just seems real shitty way to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, this doesn't make any sense. You know, going back to their initial layoffs in January, where they released like, what, 500 people. It's wild to me that all of a sudden you feel more for Riot when they release 500, and all of a sudden, because they released 27, you think they're making the right move. And I'm not saying, you know, I feel that way. I definitely don't, but it's just dumb, you know. Mm. I'm going to be straight up. I actually interviewed for a role with Riot to be a community manager on Valorant a couple months ago, and I found out that a community manager on Valorant was one of these 27 fired. And that sucks, you know? Like, I don't know whether, I do know. This person has been there for a couple of years. At the end of the day, I don't know if they actually hired for that role that I interviewed for. But at the end of the day, I'm like, how can you say this wasn't about, like, cutting back on budget and then all of a sudden backing that up with saying that they're going to be bigger in a few years? That makes zero sense, you know? League of Legends is one of the biggest live service games out there currently. Riot is, you know, despite this, or, you know, in behooving of this, like, they're definitely one of the best live service developers and publishers out there. But, like, saying what they're saying makes absolutely no sense at all. It doesn't make any sense for Riot. It doesn't make any sense for the people who work there. And it doesn't mm-hmm. make any sense for the people that play their games. So, yeah, this is totally tone deaf. And, like, it goes back to, like, my interview process with the recruiter. I'm like, you already made these layoffs in January, so what would you say makes me believe that you won't do it in the future? And here they are doing it with something that affected the role that I wanted. It's just, it makes no sense to me, and I just feel for, you know, whoever lost their jobs and whoever might try to pursue something there in the future, because, you know, Riot, in my opinion, is definitely up there with you know, Blizzard and Microsoft and any other AAA studios that are up there as far as, like, you know, trying to find a solidified role in the gaming industry, and they just proved right here that they're not, and that sucks.
Yeah. So, yeah, they have laid off 32 people, 27 from the team itself, and 5 from the publishing side.
Mm.
So not a huge amount of people, but the just the way that they're doing this just seems done in a really poor manner, making it seem like this is what our plan for the game is for the future.
Mm.
It's layoffs. Like, how the hell does that help the average player of the game? Mm. Which is that it doesn't. So there you go. Yeah, let's get one more bad story out there. Bandai Namco is reportedly cutting about 200 staff as they are canceling a number of titles. I don't know if we have specific titles here, but they are canceling several titles due to lackluster demand. And it seems like this is layoffs in the Japanese sense, which is that they ask them to resign, quit. Yeah, it's alleged that 200 of its 1,300 employees have been moved into these expulsion rooms, or Oidashi Beya.
Mm-hmm.
Almost half of these have since voluntarily resigned. Mm. Yeah, they're giving them nothing to do, putting pressure on them to leave voluntarily so they don't have to do any sort of severance or anything. Mm. Sounds like a very fun place to be.
Yeah.
Very much had me being like, no, I'll just sit here. You're going to keep paying me. I'll keep doing this. But yeah, let's see, they are, yeah, they've had half of the people, about 100 already left, trying to get another 100 to go. That's fun.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, this is a, it's a negative story, but mm-hmm. also like, this is like one of the first ones where we see a Japanese studio actually doing something bad as a result of like what's happening in, you know, the economy. And yeah, the yen is bad right now. That's why we have a lot of like Americans who don't have a lot of money going to Japan for vacation, because yeah, the yen is absolutely garbage right now as far as the exchange rate, and we're seeing people benefit from that. That being mm-hmm. said, looking at what's happening in Bandai Namco or the gaming industry in general, is yeah, Japan is not immune to these layoffs either, especially, like, you know, you'd think they'd be doing well, especially with the success of the Elden Ring DLC, as well as Dragon Ball Sparking Zero. But no, there's definitely some bad stuff going on as well, and it even affects their anime games, which is their bread and butter. And the funny thing about this one, I mean, I'm saying funny loosely, I'm not saying it's funny, but, like, you know, I'm not saying it's a fact either, but this expulsion rooms thing is definitely hilarious to me in particular, because, you know, they aren't necessarily being laid off and they aren't necessarily being fired, right? They're pretty much being sent to these rooms in the hopes that they'd resign or anything of that nature, right? If this yeah. were me and I'm being sent to an expulsion room, I will gladly go to the expulsion room to do nothing and be paid my salary. I don't care. Mm-hmm. I am not below that at all, or I'm not above that at all. So if I'm going to make my money and not do anything, by all means, you know, I'll just go ahead and not include the work that I didn't do on my resume and I'll move forward. Yeah. But yeah, like, this is definitely tough to see. And I know that there's definitely a different kind of culture barrier. Like, you know, the Japanese expect to go to work to actually work. And, you know, this will definitely affect their pride in that regard. But again, if this were me and I'm being sent to a room to do nothing and still get paid for it, I would not care. So, yeah.
Yeah, it seems like the corporate version of a study hall
mm-hmm.
Kind of thing. But yeah, it's a thing that I think is fairly common in Japanese companies, especially game devs. I think Konami used this a lot, as they either had people they wanted to pressure into quitting or go work in one of their other branches that were not games related. When they were, you know, trying to shed as many people as they could when they wanted to stop making games. They may very well have been what they did with Kojima towards the end of Metal Gear Solid 5 development,
uh-huh.
as they separated him from the team and kind of didn't allow him contact with them to, you know, finish up the game they were trying to make.
Yeah.
At a certain point. So, yeah, this is not an uncommon thing.
Yeah, it's been rumored that this is what Nintendo did to Gunpei Yokoi after the Virtual Boy fell out, which, for the record, turned out to not be true. He was already getting ready to leave the company anyway, but
yeah
it's a known tactic in Japanese corporate culture.
Yeah. It's not a great way to go. Mm-hmm. But Bandai Namco, yeah, has been kind of in a weird place of late for releases, because like Sandland came out. I don't know that very many people even knew that what that was, much less bought it. And they just keep pumping out a bunch of anime games. And when you're like, I sure hope all these are doing well, because otherwise it just seems like you're making a bunch of stuff for smaller audiences that may or may not actually want them, depending on the games that they are making. I don't know if it was them. It might have been Sega that was making the... I think it was Jujutsu Kaisen, like, Mario Party game. That was kind of a weird kind of game to make, but it might have done all right on its own, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, Bandai Namco, at the end of the day, is known as the anime studio. You know, they just released Dragon Ball. You know, they had the Sandland game last year, and yeah, it is what it is with them. But at the same time, it's like, I don't know if I would dock them for going ahead and releasing stuff. Like, you know, for example, this week alone, we had Unknown 9 came out. I don't know if you or Brandon know what that game was. I don't know what that
I
game
do.
Was.
I vaguely remember it from the like one of the major one of the like big showcases that was in the last few months. Yeah. I already looked. I was like, it might have some potential, but it looks pretty bland. And yeah, it turned out it was a huge bomb.
Yeah. And like at the end of the day, like it looks fine, and fine is like not good enough. But at the end of the day, like you and I both know, all three of us know that we need the AA, you know, B releases.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, it's like, it's also like shutting these studios down. So yep. It's like, okay, where can they come from? Like, can it really just come from indies? And yeah, that's just what makes it tough. And from what I've seen, the game didn't review badly. It's actually like pretty fair, but fair is not good enough in this industry. Mm. And I don't know if it's a $50 or $60 game, which would be considered budget in today's standards, but it's not like Bandai Namco isn't doing anything. You know, they're mm-hmm. definitely releasing some games out to die, but at the end of the day, like they're still doing stuff, and it just sucks to see this being the result.
Mm.
Yeah, that one, let's see, a $50 game. Yeah, it just came out this past week. And yeah, it's that one's been in some of the Jeff Keighley shows a couple times in the past year. But yeah, if you want to know Bandai Namco's output, this is their 2024 lineup. There's Tekken 8, Jujutsu Kaisen Cursed Clash, Sword Art Online Fractured Daydream, Spy Anya, Operation Memories, Pac-Man Mega Tunnel Battle Chomp Champs, That Time I Got Reincarnated as a Slime, Isekai Chronicles, Sandland, Gundam Breaker 4, Dragon Ball Sparking Zero, and Unknown 9 Awakening. That's all in 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
As far as critic stuff goes, three of those games are good. And, you know, if you have three hits a year, that should be good enough for your publishing studio, but it's not. And that's where we live right now.
Yeah. And, like, that's a lot of games. Mm-hmm. You really hope that they are not huge budget games, which I think usually they are not huge budget games, as you can see from a lot of the way these games look. But like I would say Sandland and Dragon Ball Sparking Zero and Tekken 8 were all probably pretty high budget games. Probably Sandland on the bottom of that, but the other two had a lot of work put into them. But yeah, they've had what? There's five already listed here for next year. Fate Extra Record, Little Nightmares 3, Tales of Graces F Remastered, Freedom Wars Remastered, and the Sin Duality Echo of Eda. So two remasters for next year so far. But yeah, there you go. For your bed news, industry news of the week.
Mm-hmm.
We'll end here with the Xbox Partner Preview, which was a pretty decent show.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it was a show where it felt like everything was either like a horror game or some sort of Souls-like style game.
Yeah.
For a lot of this. It's kind of weird. It's like, there's a couple of like other games, indie games and such that were like, oh, this sticks out because it doesn't look like everything else. Here, but we'll work our way through this. Alan Wake 2, The Lake House DLC is out this week, October 22nd. So you can finally check that out. It seems like they are going full in on the horror stuff for that versus the last DLC that was all kind of wacky fun stuff. Let's see, we got Chronos, The New Dawn. This is the new Bloober Team game, which is now getting some good vibes around it now that people like Silent Hill 2.
Mm-hmm.
So people are kind of looking at this as like a nice new game. Kind of looks like it's got some Dead Space vibes and such to it. So that looks neat. That's out next year at some point on PlayStation, Xbox, and PC. There's Blind Fire, which is a new multiplayer first-person shooter game where it kind of takes place in more environments that are kind of dark with a lot of like glowing elements to them. Have other players stick out. Early Access is out now on Xbox and PC, and will be out on PS5 at some point later. We got to finally see some gameplay of Like a Dragon Pirate Yakuza in Hawaii, which looks wild.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how much it's pulling from Infinite Wealth, but it looks like a lot of new areas here as you're doing a lot of actual piloting of pirate ships to get around and take on enemies and all that kind of stuff. As Goro Majima does not remember who he originally was, but has taken on a pirate persona here.
As you did.
Yeah. And he's going around fighting a bunch of people as a result. Yep.
As he typically does.
Yeah. With at least one special guest wrestler, which is Samoa Joe. From AEW, yep. Which I think is the first Western wrestler that they've had in here. Maybe they had Kenny Omega, though he mostly worked Japanese promotions for a while that game was going until the last few years. So, but yeah, that's moving. It was February 28th, the same time as Monster Hunter Wilds, and they moved up a week, February 21st. So they blink. They were the ones to blink.
Mm-hmm.
Get that game out of the way. Then next we got Mouse PI for Hire. This is a game we've seen for a while. That was just on PC initially. Is a first-person shooter set in like a classic like 1930s Mickey cartoon style world.
Mm-hmm.
But more in terms of like mice gangsters and such, like a maybe more mafia kind of thing going on here. But
yeah,
looks really nice for what it is. It's out next year at some point. It'll be on everything: PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that looks neat. Subnautica 2 was announced. It used to be Xbox and PC and Game Pass as well. That'll be out early access next year. That one's already getting the shitty people complaining because the two characters they showed in the game is an Asian woman and a black guy. So they're mad about that.
Yeah.
Even though you don't see your character very much in that game. So that's fun.
Yeah.
Then we got a trailer for Animal Well, which is out now on Xbox. Mm-hmm. Then we got Eden Zero, which is a new show it's a manga that has an anime coming out pretty recently. Is getting a game adaptation. This is from the guy that did Fairy Tail and Raid Master.
And if you can't tell by just looking at it that it's by the guy who made Fairy Tail and Raid Master, then you've never seen Fairy Tail and Raid Master. It couldn't be more obvious that it's Hiro Mashima.
That's coming to PS5, Xbox, and PC. Yeah, they just confirmed PS5. Okay. That's good. That is... let's see. They announced Eternal Strands, which is a Souls-like game, or an action-adventure game. Something like that. That'll be coming to Game Pass in early 2025. Let's see. Yeah, that's one that's looks like it's a Souls game, but it's I don't think it's directly a Souls game. Oh. Like it's just action adventure game. And there's Mistfall Hunter, which is only on Xbox and PC for next year.
Mm-hmm.
This is a third-person PvPvE extraction action RPG. So a lot of words there. So yeah, kind of a multiplayer action RPG kind of game. So it definitely has a lot of Souls vibes to it with a lot of the character designs and such. So
yeah,
there's that. Wheel World got announced. This is for PlayStation, Xbox, and PC, and will be on Game Pass as well early next year. This is a neat-looking game from Annapurna Interactive and developer Messhoff, which I believe is the Nidhogg developer. Mm. It's an open-world biking game where I don't know if there's a ton of story to this, but you're kind of just able to bike around and do tricks and all that kind of fun stuff and explore and all that and probably do some races and whatnot. Looks really neat, has a nice style to it, so that's cool. Then we got a date for Phasmophobia. They've been porting this to consoles for a while now. It's coming to PS5, PSVR2, and Xbox October 29th. So we're going to play that on consoles before Halloween hits. Then there's The Legend of Babu, an action-adventure game. I don't know. Kind of looks like it has some, it kind of has like some Chinese developer vibes to it, but they just mentioned it's inspired by Fables. But yeah, that looks neat. Then there's Wu Chang Fallen Feathers for Xbox, PC, and Game Pass. This definitely is a Souls-like game. It has a lot of stuff going on. Set in the late Ming Dynasty, so set in China. So more of that. That'll be out next year. And then they ended on FBC Firebreak. This is what was the Control spinoff multiplayer game. Which seems like it's maybe more Left 4 Dead-ish kind of thing. We were playing with a few people, taking on a bunch of enemies in one of the Federal Bureau of Control areas. This was Project Condor. So that'll be out in 2025 at some point. It'll be on Game Pass. I guess also on PlayStation Plus Extra and Premium as well. So that's cool. It'll be on both the subscription services, and so people will be able to check it out without having to put money into it. This is a game they were planning to be free to play, and then they changed their mind on that. I guess this is how they're getting the best of both worlds.
Yep.
There's your Xbox partner preview. Some pretty decent stuff there. I don't know anything that's super amazing, at least from what we've seen so far. But anything there stood out for you, Brandon?
The mouse PI one is one that I've been anticipating for a little while, because I do love that rubber hose aesthetic, and I love the idea of them putting it in like a fairly violent first person shooter as well. I'm interested to see what they're going to do with that. But yeah, that's pretty much it.
How about you, Dan Rub?
I haven't had a chance to actually watch this in detail. But you know, as for the highlights, the things that definitely spoke to me were Mouse PI for Hire. That one looked pretty cool. I've heard a lot of things about Phasmophobia, especially since like my job actually requires me to watch a lot of Halloween streams, and Phasmophobia is like on 50% of the time, so you know there's that. But that one didn't really speak to me. The ones that definitely had my attention were, you know, what I just mentioned, Ghost Bike, and of course Pirate Yakuza. But like, you know, a lot of the stuff seen in Pirate Yakuza has been seen in multiple Yakuza games in the past. So I'm not going to say that they've definitely broken new ground there, but they've definitely made me more excited for the game. Legend of Babu also looks interesting. It looks like it might be a little bit too much, but there's definitely something there.
Yeah. As I said, Wheel World was one that stood out to me. This other stuff, I don't know. I'll probably check out Subnautica 2 at some point, especially if it's on Game Pass. Like Mouse PI for Hire would be nice to see, but yeah, I don't know what else here other than stuff that'll be on Game Pass that I'll probably download and see what it is, but it was a fine preview of a handful of things that were coming out next year. Not really too much here that we either didn't already know about or are bowled over, super excited for, but yeah. I think we'll do it there. That'll be the show for this week. Thank you to Brandon and Danner for joining.
Always.
We'll be back next week with a new slate of news and things to talk about. I'm trying to see what we got for releases here. Let's see. It's almost the end of the month. Yeah, here we go. Fae Farm is coming out to PlayStation and Xbox, so that's over there. Kong Survival Instinct is on PS5 and Xbox. New Kong game. Wildermyth is coming to all the consoles, so that's cool. It's like a tactical RPG, kind of almost like a D&D kind of thing, with some more branching narrative stuff to it. That I've heard good things about. Let's see here. Wilmot Works It Out. I'm excited for that. Get to build some puzzles. Something much less stressful than managing a warehouse of crap. Let's see. Goat Simulator 3 is coming to the PS4 and Xbox One. If you wanted to see how that game looks on worse hardware, there you go. Let's see. Yeah, there's a new Shin-Chan game that's kind of a... the last one, kind of a slice of life kind of game. Slay the Princess, the Pristine Cut is out. If you like your horror visual novels stuff, that is on the consoles with some more content to it, so that's cool. Yakuza Kiwami is out on the Switch on the 24th. So people that have not played that yet can do that. As I said, Call of Duty Black Ops 6 is out this week. Sonic and Shadow Generations and East X Nordics is also out. Some stuff to check out. Thank you all for tuning in. If you enjoy the show, feel free to let friends and family know. They should check it out. And select strangers that are also looking forward to some games. Thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good week ahead. We'll see you all next time. Have a good one.